Now I'd like to introduce you to Peter Sullivan. Peter Sullivan is a professional speaker and workshop leader. He's well qualified to speak on the topic of human happiness and achievement. Peter has spent a major part of his life studying and researching why some people achieve happiness, good health and high achievement, and other equally talented people fail to achieve their potential. Peter is a leading authority on business and sales application of emotional intelligence and learned optimism. He's featured on Channel 9 and in the Financial Review for his work in this area. Now, Peter will be talking to you about some of the latest research and practical ideas on how good people can achieve a happier and more successful life. Here to present Attitude and Action for Successful Living, would you please welcome Peter Sullivan.
Isn't it interesting? Some people get up in the morning bright and shining and some get up bright and whining. You know the types? Is that our pursuit to be have a happier and healthy life? Is that true? How many people want to be happier? That's scary, folks. If you look at the data, we've got about four times the actual standard of living now since the 50s. Our actual income and our standard of living has gone up. Guess where the happiness index across a nation is? The same. Hasn't changed. So it's not things. There's clear evidence that things don't make us happy. Possessions don't make us happy. Experiences have some link to happiness. You know, those positive experiences, the wins we have, the trips we do, those positive experiences in life, but they tend to be a bit transient too. It turns out that most human beings have a natural default mechanism. Like a guy I know said the happiest day for him was the day before he got his Porsche. You know what I mean? The anticipation can be quite good, but often when we get it, it doesn't always live up to our expectations, and that happiness doesn't stay with us. So what I want to talk to you today is about resetting the default mechanism. How do we actually shift it? How do we actually sustain long-term happiness? And it'll have a lot to do with links to our health and our achievement level as well. Maybe we just need to go back to some basics on this. It's around emotions. I mean, happiness is an emotion, isn't it? Sadness is an emotion. Anger is an emotion. Most people don't understand the rules of the game. Most people just don't get it. They don't understand why they feel the way they do. So let's go back to some 101 basics on emotions. Let's take a simple emotion like fear. If any of us were walking along in long grass and our foot nearly goes on a snake and it's about to touch the snake, what's the immediate emotion we'd have? Fear. And the response would be jump or run or startle. Now, most of us say snakes make us scared. But I want you to think about that very carefully for a moment. If you had an 8 or 10 month old child that crawls up to the snake, what's the reaction of the child? Curiosity. What's other reactions have we got? Touch it. One group I was working with said, that's the stage where the baby bites the snake. So, interesting, isn't it? How come we're scared and the kid's not? It's conditioning. But you used to think we were conditioned to feel fear, but there's actually something intervening before that. Why are we scared of snakes? What's the knowledge? What are we taught? So we're talking around it, but what's the actual knowledge we've got about snakes? Snakes are dangerous. Snakes are biteys. So as a human being, I've been conditioned to think a certain thought about a snake. So when my mind sees it's a snake, my foot goes down, my mind says danger, my gut says fear, and my legs say run. Now that's about a half second response. True? If I was walking along in that long grass and then my foot went down on a stick but I thought it was a snake, what would I feel? And what would I do? The same. So my perception, my belief, Paul said, that was a great thing that Gary's done for me to have Paul Ruse as my man on first to set the scene on attitude. It's that perception, that attitude we bring to that environment that makes us react. I want to put it to you. You can't have a feeling without having a thought. Now, because those emotions come so quickly, because of the thoughts, the habits of thought we've got, are so well patterned, so well conditioned, they're at a very low state of awareness. And because they're a low state of awareness, we don't pick them up. Turns out, as human beings, we have 60 to 70,000 thoughts a day. Think about it. On top of this shoulder is a thought factory. It's generating thoughts every moment of the day. In fact, the clinical definition of death is when that thinking process, when those brain waves stop. Isn't that true? So thoughts are a sign of life. 60 to 70,000 thoughts a day. I was training a group the other day and a woman said, yeah, men have 60, 70,000 thoughts a day, but it's all about the one thing. Can't argue. Interesting though, when you look at those 60 to 70,000 thoughts a day, most of them are about the future and most of them are wrong. Most of them are wrong. They're just what happens ifs. If you look at depressed people, psychologists say that depressed people's thinking is negative about 91% of the time. 91% of the time. But with normal people, negative thinking is about 80% of the time. So as human beings, we have a predisposition to think negatively. Now, without getting too heavy about the neuroscience and the evolutionary psychology about that, you know, 100,000 years ago, when you came out of, as human beings came out of the jungles into the plains and were vulnerable, when we saw a wild animal, we had to make a very important choice. Do I eat it or does it eat me? And I tell you what, if you got that decision wrong, you didn't pass your genetic material on to the next generation. So we had a natural predisposition to assume the worst because that worked for us. Because there was a lot of danger. About the most dangerous thing any of us do these days is get in our car, isn't it? I mean, life expectancy's doubled. Yeah, we don't have graveyards full of kids that are dying at 1 or 2 or 3 years of age. You know, we aren't confronted with life or death to the degree that we were in the past. But neurologically, we're still basically the same framework. So don't get too hung up on negative thinking, but we sure have a choice about how long it stays there. Once you get a handle of this, well, let me put this to you. Since I've learnt this stuff, nobody can upset me. How can I either be that cheeky or that wrong? I want to make the claim to all of you that nobody can upset me. That usually tests a few people out, but Eleanor Roosevelt, that's a great quote, that nobody can make me feel inferior without my consent. Lovely quote, isn't it? You're heading the direction. See, I didn't say I don't get upset. I said nobody upsets me. Who is it, in fact, that upsets me? Me. Now, that is the most important attitudinal shift you can ever make in your life, I believe, because you shift cause and effect. As soon as you say snakes make me scared, or the world makes me angry, or the market gets me down, or I can't cope with that traffic, you're attributing your emotions to an external source that you probably haven't got control over. Is that true? Sometimes that's called victim mentality. If you attribute the way you feel to the way something's happening in your environment, you're just a victim. So I have a little exercise. If you want to temporarily blame somebody else for the way you feel, you can point at them, but remember where these other three fingers are pointing. I'm responsible for how I think, how I feel, and how I act. What I would encourage you to do is to adopt a no cop-out, no blame, no excuse. No matter what's happening to you, you do have a choice about the way you react. Is that true? I'm not saying this is easy, but it's a lot easier than being a victim. You have a choice. Now, you might think I'm one of those people that believes in positive thinking. Well, let me tell you I don't, for several reasons. One, as I said, there's a natural predisposition to think negatively. There is very scant scientific evidence linking positive thinking with success. Now, that might sound heresy, But there is reams of evidence now coming from the psychological world showing the absence of negative thinking under pressure, the absence of negative thinking in the face of adversity, is the point of difference of successful people. Positive thinking can be a bit glib. It's too glib for me. I mean, I heard about a guy fell off a 40-story building going past the 22nd floor saying, "So far, so good." That sort of mindset won't really get you anywhere. So, whether we call it attitude, perception, cognition, evaluation, in other words, when something happens to us, it has to go through this filter. It has to go through this lens. Now, that might be our past experiences. It might be some of the values we've learned. But nevertheless, we have to think before we can feel. Like I read some research that said 2% of any audience will hate my guts. It's a bit of a pity when they're all in the same audience. But if I don't know about it, how do I feel it? If I don't know who it is, how do I feel? I don't have a feeling yet, because I don't know yet. It's only when I start to interpret that, how I actually internalise that, how I actually describe that to myself will cause me either to be able to accept that or I might feel hurt or shattered by that. So part of this whole process is to be aware that there's thinking going on. If you look at some of the data, I'll just show you a little on. How many people in this audience are aware of emotional intelligence? Good. You know, I used to ask that question about 7 or 8 years ago and you'd hardly get a hand up. Emotional intelligence, it sounds like an oxymoron, doesn't it? How can you have intelligent emotions? Well, think of the word emotion for me. If it's small e, capital M-O-T-I-O-N, what does that tell us? Motion. Motion means movement. Now, emotions have a very important component. Emotions actually move us. We move towards the thing that we feel optimistic about. We move towards the things that we perceive as pleasurable, and we move away from the things that are uncomfortable. Emotions actually drive behaviours. So emotional intelligence is about understanding our thinking, our feelings, our behaviours, and how to manage those. Probably won't have time to talk about it in the time we've got today, but it's also about understanding and managing the emotions of others. Isn't that important with your clients? How do we manage their emotions? How do we get passion in our staff? That's an emotion. Do we want to get rid of emotion? No, maybe we want to get rid of emotional, but not emotions. Let me just give you some dimensions here. I just say it's a new way of being smart. IQ is a way of being smart, but IQ isn't everything. For instance, those of you, remember back to school days. Remember the ones that were always the smartest in the class, always first or second or third, no matter what class, they always performed at the top. Have they all lived up to that potential in the outside world? I see some heads. Some have, some haven't. Were there some kids that you went through school with that weren't that bright in the system? Yet they've gone on to live very happy and very productive lives. True? Now, education is a predictor of success, but it's not a good predictor. IQ is a predictor of success, but it's not a good predictor. I think we all know some people that are so smart they're stupid. You know, they couldn't organise a barbecue, could they? So there's different types of intelligence. Now, you need a good IQ to get in the game that you guys do, right? You need a good IQ. If you're dumb, you're really battling it. But after that, once you've got enough IQ to get in the game, your emotional quotient, they call it your EQ even, your EQ or your EI is really the leverage point. And I'll just talk about some of those dimensions there. Part of it's self-awareness. And I've hinted at this. Be aware of how your thinking impacts the way you feel, the way you act. Be aware that you can't have an emotion without a thought. Be aware that your emotions are a good barometer of your thinking. Guess what? If you've got a negative emotion, you must have a negative thought. Doesn't take a lot to realise that. If you take ownership of your emotions, who's creating that thought? Just think about this for a moment. If negative emotions come from a thought, If that emotion you're feeling is coming from a thought you made up, why should you be hijacked by an emotion that came from a thought you just generated? Your emotion is just following the script. If you predict something bad, you'll feel bad. True? If you anticipate something good, you'll feel good. Who's in control here? So one of the major things that I see missing in a lot of training, a lot of development, is thought recognition. Recognizing the patterns of thought. They're like any other habit. They are habits of thought. And once you recognize them, that really empowers you to change them. Good luck with your endeavors, folks. Thank you.